Okay, we're back at it.
How about them Cowboys? Yeah.
It's only one Oklahoma, and it was state. And it was state.
We are back at it. Welcome back to another edition of the Pistols Firing Podcast. I'm Carson Cunningham, joined as always by Colby Powell. Colby, happy Orange Friday to you, sir.
Happy Orange Friday. Happy long weekend. It is Memorial Day weekend. Y'all right. Got any plans?
What's that?
Y'all got any plans? What are y'all doing this weekend?
Have no plans. We're going to take a trip in mid-June. So we're kind of saving money. And we're not big lake people unless, you know, we get invited. We don't have a boat. We have some friends that have boats, but we're not going to invite ourselves. So we'll probably just keep it low key, stay at home. So no major plans. And I don't know about you, Colby. I don't really like going to the lake during holiday weekends. It's just, it's too busy. It's too crazy. The water's too choppy. I loved it in my younger days when I didn't care about any of that, but I'm old now. So maybe I'm not as fun.
Yeah, that's fair. I'm not a huge lake guy. The lake brings on a lot of the evil sun. And I know somebody's listening and thinking, but Colby, you play golf 8 days a week. Yes, but I'm wearing hats and shirts and sunscreen, and I'm focused on golf, not so much just on the fact that I'm sitting there just cooking all day long. So I get majorly sunburnt at the lake, and I'm not a huge boat guy. I get motion sick too, so that doesn't do a lot for me. So I will be playing golf this week. I'm actually going back to Chickasha. It's probably been a couple of years since I've been to Chickasha. Once my grandparents passed and my mom and dad moved to Oklahoma City, I haven't had a ton of reasons to go back down there, but my best friend from high school, he invited me to come down and play in a tournament tomorrow and Sunday, a two-man scramble down there. So going to do that. And then I think we're swimming at my parents' house on Monday. Got our daughter's new swimsuit in the other day. Has some little floaties wrapped around the midsection on it. We'll see how she does as a two-year-old getting in the pool this weekend.
Yeah, we have a neighborhood pool opens today, in fact. So, yeah, that's probably where I'll be. Just if I need to get on the water, that's the water I'm going to be on, not the lake water. So.
Yeah, I'm with you.
It should be a fun Memorial Day weekend. I hope everyone enjoys theirs. This podcast is brought to you by Chris's University Spirit, your one-stop cowboy shop. Be sure to shop at chrisuniversityspirit.com. I'm not sure if they have Pistol Pete swimsuits in stock, but they should have a good t-shirt to wear around the pool or certainly to the lake. You're going to want to wear the latest, greatest hat apparel on the lake. Get you some OSU gear at Chris's. We appreciate them sponsoring the podcast per usual. You may be able to pick up a Wrestling Pete hat. We do have some wrestling news coming fast and furious. Colby, there's a lot of news to get to, but I think first I wanted to touch on Tyler Caldwell being officially named to the coaching staff. He stays on as an assistant coach. He, of course, wrestled at Oklahoma State, and it's interesting, Colby, the main guy keeping him from winning a national title was one David Taylor. He locked horns with Taylor a ton when he wrestled at Penn State and Caldwell was at Oklahoma State. But I think this is a really, really good move, first and foremost, Colby. And second of all, it's nice to keep an in-house assistant in Tyler Caldwell. So you keep some of that OSU flavor with the new faces coming in.
Yeah, this has major Steve Lutz, Keaton Page vibes, right?
Yeah, that's a good comparison.
Yeah, I mean, you bring the new guy in, but you keep some familiarity on the staff, a guy who's been around, a guy who just kind of knows Stillwater, knows Oklahoma, knows this part of the country, presumably knows all the high school coaches around here. And I think it's a great move for the same reason that Lutz kept Keaton Page on, just for that local familiarity, because there's just – you can have everyone tell you everything about being in a place, but until you've been in that place, I just don't think you understand the ins and outs, the day-to-day, the businesses, the people, just all the different things that go on in that place. Like if Tyler Caldwell just got picked up and dropped into Happy Valley, like it'd be nice to have some people who know what goes on around Penn State up there. So I think this is a good move to just keep a local guy in the mix. And the fact that these two were such fierce competitors whenever they were both in school and now they're on the same staff at Oklahoma State, I love it. There's been so many wrestling headlines the past few weeks. It's really been wrestling overload, and it just gets you excited for what the future of this program could look like and what the energy and the atmosphere in Gallagher-Iba could be. I don't know if Penn State stays where they're at and David Taylor elevates this program to a level close to that. I can't imagine if somehow we could get those two programs to duel in Gallagher-Iba Arena. It would just be unbelievable. So just continue to be fired up about the direction of the Oklahoma State wrestling program.
Yeah, and an interesting note here too, in the aftermath of John Smith retiring, you had to kind of keep guys in the fold. OSU didn't have a mass exodus to the transfer portal. And according to Seth Duckworth, who we had on when David Taylor was announced as the head coach, he tweeted that it's a good move by all accounts I've heard. Caldwell did a lot to keep the team together the last few weeks. He has a prior competitive relationship with Taylor, recruiting ties to the area, keeps at least one OSU grad around, and a lot more. Win-win for everyone involved. I think that's pretty much well said. We give so much credence to who you get in recruiting as an assistant coach, but it's also important to keep the guys you have on campus in-house. And anytime there's a coaching change, that's a big threat. And it seems like Caldwell was really able to hold things together for the OSU staff. So that was a big feather in his cap. And, you know, Colby, when Taylor was announced as the head coach, you know, we kind of wondered what's this going to mean in terms of talent that they're going to be able to get. Well, they landed a big fish. They got the three-time NCAA Falls leader, Wyatt Hendrickson, has committed to Oklahoma State. He's a two-time All-American and a Big 12 champion from Air Force. Led the nation in just pins. I mean, you want to talk about – it's always fun when the big fellas get on the mat and there's a pin. That's just – that always blows the roof off Gallagher, Iba. But a massive, massive get for David Taylor already, which shows you just the appeal he's going to have to, you know, the best wrestlers in the country.
Yeah, absolutely. Whenever this headline came through, it's like, okay, that – I mean, not that the hire needed solidified or anything, or that we're going to judge – David Taylor and Chad Weiberg on how the first summer of this thing goes, but just that instant gratification, right? Everybody wants that instant gratification. And when you go to pistolsfiringblog.com and you see, hey, I'm reading through here, Wyatt Hendrickson, three-time, and I'm scrolling down, it's like, okay, this is big boy wrestling right here. 25-2 in 2024, 16 falls in that season. He's a two-time All-American at Air Force. He was third the last two NCAA championships at the heavyweight level. He reached the national tournament all four seasons. He's a two-time Big 12 champion, obviously, at Air Force. And it's just, yeah, a great get on the mat for David Taylor to start his coaching career at Oklahoma State.
Interesting quote here from Hendrickson that I think kind of illustrates just once again why Chad Weiberg made this hire. He said, quote, "It was shocking at first because I had a good relationship with the current coaching staff, all those guys. They're keeping Tyler Caldwell, but obviously I went through my visit with them. But I got to say, it was for the better because David Taylor was really the guy who made me love wrestling."
Wow.
I mean, expect to hear a quote similar to that for the next 5 years when a top wrestler commits to OSU, right?
Yeah, no doubt. It's you know, I've got golf on in the background here, and it's like all these guys forever who said that the reason they golfed was Tiger, right? And David Taylor, you know, somebody compared him to Tom Brady a couple of weeks ago on Twitter, as if, you know, you would have hired Tom Brady to be your football coach and the guys want to come in and play for him. And David Taylor seems to kind of be that of wrestling. And to say that he's the guy who made you love wrestling, and so then you come to Oklahoma State to wrestle for that guy, I mean, there's going to be a few years here where hopefully David Taylor's career is so recent that all these kids coming up have watched him wrestle and understand what he was on the mat. Because in 20 years, that's not going to be the case, right? The kids who are going to wrestle for him in 20 years are the kids that are being born right now up at Mercy. But kids that were born in 2005, something like that, and they want to come play for David Taylor, wrestle for David Taylor, yeah, I think that that's going to carry some weight. So hopefully he can use the heels of his wrestling career to just build a great roster and have great success early. And then once his career fades into the background a little bit and he just becomes known as Coach David Taylor, then the program will be at such a level that guys won't want to come wrestle for him because of what he did on the mat. Guys will want to come wrestle for him because of what he's accomplished on the sidelines. So it just kind of feels like a perfect storm.
Yeah, and just to wrap things up, Cameron Amine committed from in the transfer portal from Michigan, three-time All-American. So there's a lot of spots filling up here, and we'll have to see how the actual starting lineup will shake out. But more than anything, Colby, just kind of to wrap up the wrestling thoughts, like I was actually thinking about this yesterday. I was walking to my car, and you know how random things just will pop in your head. I kind of thought, like, wow, it's been a long time since I truly cared about OSU wrestling, truly like followed it, truly went to it. Like people know this. I grew up with two very competitive high school wrestlers. Johnny Hendricks was on our high school wrestling team. I grew up watching wrestling through them. And then one of those wrestlers went to school with me. Adam Kirk's his name, up at Oklahoma State. And we used to go to all the duels together. And this is back, like Seth Duckworth mentioned, back when OSU was winning 5 national titles in a row. Like, it was a big deal. And it kind of, it's been so long, I kind of forgot like how much I cared about it. But I got to tell you, Colby, ever since this David Taylor hire, like, I've got on the chamber on Pistols Firing. I would encourage people to sign up. It's a great forum. I'm almost as excited to click on the, I'm as excited to click on the wrestling topic and see what's going on in there as I am right now with like football or basketball, or especially basketball. Like, I'm more interested in what's going on with David Taylor right now than the transfer portal and hoop. So to me, Colby, it's been a long time, but I think this last month has really kind of rekindled my appreciation for OSU wrestling. It really has.
Yeah, like you talk about with that program that won 5 in a row and those teams and stuff, like, that's what breeds the love of the program. And I think sometimes with collegiate programs, professional teams, whatever it is, change at the top can really ingrain hope in a fan base. And I think that that's what the Oklahoma State wrestling fan base has right now, is hope, right? I mean, there's been this big change after so long, and obviously everybody is so appreciative of John Smith and just the legend that he is and what he created and sustained at Oklahoma State. But it was also time for a change, and that has happened. And now there's just this wave of hope around the Oklahoma State wrestling program that I really think is going to have Gallagher Iba absolutely rocking next year for some of these duels. So I wasn't able to get up there this year. The Iowa duel was on my wife's birthday, and she's not a big wrestling fan, so couldn't talk her into spending her birthday in Gallagher Iba Arena. But I really hope to get up there next year to see a big duel between, you know, Oklahoma State and another big time program, just to feel the atmosphere. But I went to some of those whenever I was in school there, 2011 through 15, and they were a ton of fun. So hopefully this next season we'll be able to get up there. Maybe we can even pick a weekend, Carson, you and me, and we can go up there and watch a duel.
Yeah, no, I'm in. I'm going to do that. I'm saying that right now. I will be up there at some point. It's a matter of which duel, like you mentioned. It was four straight national championships. I think Seth threw me a curveball. I think he said 5. It's really 4. I thought my memory told me it was 4 because
felt like
they
5.
They started winning them right when I got there. So that makes a lot of sense. But anyway, hopefully they can get back to that. Let's transition now to baseball. You got the Big 12 championships going on. OSU did win against Texas Tech in the second round of the Big 12 tournament, but they did fall in extra innings to Central Florida last night. They've got a quick turnaround once again. So kind of that scenario where you lose, Colby. But I think more importantly, we'll have to see what happens this afternoon, and a lot of this can change by the time people are listening to this podcast. One thing I wanted to talk about was Carson Binge. I mean, I shouted him out recently. A very unique player that he can come in and be your third starting pitcher and be as good as your number one at times. And he also just rakes at the plate. He's one of the more all-around special talents we've seen at OSU baseball in quite some time. I mean, he pitched in their win against Texas Tech. He's been raking from the plate. I think I've started to see projections of him going in the first round. I think I saw some of that on Twitter. But Carson Binge really is having a special season for the Cowboys. That's for sure.
Yeah, he is. He's right now, he's college baseball's Shohei Ohtani. He's doing it all, and it's pretty incredible to watch. I mean, I watched probably half of the game on Wednesday night, the game against Texas Tech. We were up late watching hockey and basketball, and I had baseball on one of the TVs, and he was just everywhere. And I flipped the volume over there, and they're just talking about Carson Binge, Carson Binge, Carson Binge. And yeah, he has made this team a ton of fun. Nolan Schubert, obviously, is fantastic. He, I believe, leads the team in home runs, and I want to say either RBIs or base hits, but he's having a great season too. But for Carson Binge to be doing it on the mound and at the plate, it's rare. And it's one of those things in baseball that I think gets you really excited. You know, Carson Binge, he's 21 years old, and yeah, he's going to be a high draft pick. So he's a lot of fun to watch. And I don't know, man, I go back and forth with this team. Like, I think the high level talent is there when you look at guys like Binge, Nolan Schubert, Zach Erhard. It has come on strong here lately. He had 400 plus foot home run the other night against Texas Tech. Like, they're playing good baseball. I don't know. They're projected, I see here, the number 12 national seed in a regional that would host Dallas Baptist once again. I really hope that doesn't happen. If the NCAA could not throw all of Oklahoma State's Tuesday opponents in the regional like they did last year with Dallas Baptist and ORU, I would really like to not have to watch those two teams play in the final of a Stillwater regional again. So hopefully they get a little bit better draw than a year ago. But I'm really torn on whether I think the high-end talent on this team is going to get them to Omaha or whether the pitching is just not quite consistent and solid enough and whether they're going to come up a little bit short. I don't know. I do know UCF has had their number. UCF took 2 out of 3 from them back in March in Orlando, and then UCF got them again last night in Arlington. So if they're able to beat Texas Tech this afternoon, they'll play UCF again tonight. It's a lot of baseball. And if they fall, then just get ready for Big 12. You don't win the tournament, whatever, you move on. But yeah, UCF's had their number, Carson.
Is it just a case by the NCAA? It's like, ORU and Dallas Baptist are driving distance and they want people to go. Cause like, I don't think that's a fair way to decide a champion or a regional for that matter. Like I get the location. I get you want some road fans to be able the opportunity to go, but as a national seed, like you shouldn't play teams that are underseeded. That's kind of a detriment to Oklahoma State when they do stuff like that. I get why they do that in some of the more minor sports, not football, not basketball, but to me that's just Mickey Mouse. Like I don't want to see ORU and Dallas Baptist again just because they're close. I hate when they do stuff like that.
Yeah, I do too, and I to an extent I understand it in college baseball because it's not basketball, it's not football. There's not as much money at a place like Dallas Baptist, at a place like ORU. There's not as much money for them to travel and play in a regional in North Carolina or have to go to Oregon State and play in a regional. Like, I get that, but to know that Oklahoma State plays ORU and Dallas Baptist every year, we get them on Tuesday nights, a couple of them throughout the season, and it's weird because they're Tuesday games, and those teams have seen Oklahoma State a ton of times. There's no intimidation there. They know that they can beat Oklahoma State, and I really hated that draw last year just going into the regional. I'm pretty sure I still picked Oklahoma State because I thought they were the better team, but baseball is a different kind of game, man, and I do not want to see Dallas Baptist again at Oklahoma State's regional. They've seemingly had Oklahoma State's number two. I'm scrolling through right here. Oklahoma State played them in February. Dallas Baptist won that game 14-4 in 7 innings on a Tuesday night. Like, it's just a team that's not scared of Oklahoma State at all, and I don't love the idea of having to face them again on a Tuesday night. Pardon me, not on a Tuesday night in a regional. Let's see here. Yeah, they played them in Stillwater as well on April 16th. Dallas Baptist won that game 8-7. So please keep Dallas Baptist out of Stillwater for the regional.
It's an interesting program. Like, I started working at Channel 4 in 2008, and we covered baseball a ton back then because the Thunder weren't, frankly, here yet that first year. So we covered baseball like we did football and basketball. And even back then, Dallas Baptist was a team you didn't want to see in the midweek. So they've just kept on rolling for 15 years now. I'm with you. But like a lot of the projections, which you mentioned, are having them in either Oklahoma or Oklahoma State's regional. Kind of what I mentioned about the way they set up these, I guess the word regional is apt in that aspect. But so they're likely going to be in the state of Oklahoma. It's either going to be in Norman or in Stillwater. But one last note on Benj. I mean, he's hitting .336, 16 home runs, 59 RBIs, and just a force at the plate. And he's pitched 3 games as a starter. They've used him as a reliever most of the year, just pitching one inning, but they've used him as a starter 3 games. He has a ERA of 1.5. He's given up one earned run in all three. So talk about an all-around talent. Maybe you mentioned the pitching not being, you know, the caliber to go to the to Omaha, but we'll have to see because Benj is certainly giving him something as well.
So are you saying that you're tempted to binge watch OSU baseball today?
Oh no, not another dad joke. These are getting worse. These are getting worse.
By the way, just to tie a bow on the Dallas Baptist conversation, 42-13 this year. They went 4-0 combined against OU and OSU.
Let's send them to Norman, shall we?
Yeah, I mean, let's do that.
Unfortunately, OU's probably gonna have the better seed, so they'll probably send Baptist there, unfortunately. So this was interesting. You know, we heard and learned about Gavin Freeman transferring to Oklahoma State from OU several weeks ago, but a good article from Scott Wright in the Oklahoman. He actually has more family ties to OSU than OU. Everyone knows his dad, Jason Freeman, played tight end at the University of Oklahoma. But Gavin's grandfather, Oklahoma Coaches Association Hall of Famer Ron Freeman, played football at OSU in the 1960s. His mother, Dawn, is a Stillwater native and OSU grad. Her father wrestled at OSU, and her mother worked at the university for four decades. And the Freemans have some unique connections to Mike Gundy, the Gundy family, beginning with the 5A state championship in 1985. Gundy quarterbacked Midwest City to beat Ron Freeman's Muskogee squad. And Gundy's brother, Cale, was an assistant at OU in 94 when the Sooners recruited Jason out of Muskogee. So a lot of family ties to the Gundys, a lot of ties to Oklahoma State. But this is what I really wanted to get your thoughts on, Colby, something you and I touched on. Some really good quotes from his dad, Jason, talking about OSU's offense under Mike Gundy and certainly the way Casey Dunn uses wide receivers. He says, quote, Brennan Presley caught 101 balls last year. Obviously, that offense goes through Ollie Gordon first, but a lot of it goes through Brennan. And if you really go back and look at it, you look at guys like David Glidden, the way they use separation to get him open. And this really hits home for me. With Mike there, things have been so consistent offensively. Yeah, they've tweaked some things, but a lot of it has looked the same for a long time. I think that's pretty easy to agree with, other than, you know, the Spencer Sanders era, things got a little wonky with some cowboy backs and just the lack of the vertical throwing game. But that's certainly back this last year with Alan Bowman. But I think it's a really good ad, Colby, and just your thoughts on Freeman just seems like a fit scheme wise. And I didn't even know about all his family ties.
Yeah. As you listed off his just long resume of family ties to Oklahoma State there, it really made me question how he wound up in Norman in the first place. I'm like, were they headed east on the Kilpatrick and they meant to hook a left and they accidentally hooked a right and they wound up in Norman? Like what happened there? But he found his way to the right place eventually, it seems like. And as far as receiver depth goes, that was a conversation you and I had a couple of months ago, that this team is really solid, right? Bringing back, what, 19, 20 starters, something like that. And there's not a lot of question marks. But receiver depth was a question mark, because we saw last year that Oklahoma State had to go way down the depth chart and get the D3 transfer Leon Johnson on the field to make some big plays. He helped them win Bedlam with a couple of big catches. And you just never know how many of those guys you're going to need. And you hope that Brennan Presley plays 14 football games next year, 15, 16. But if he doesn't, who else is there to pick up that slack? And hopefully Gavin Freeman can do some of that and spell Brennan, where I'd really like to see this year. Last year's team obviously didn't have it in them, but I think this year's team has it in them to have, I don't know, two, maybe three games throughout the season where you just put it on somebody in the first half and you're able to give your stars a few less hits on Ollie, Brennan, Owens, all those guys in the second half. So, I like the idea of having more guys to spread the ball around to keep guys healthier throughout the season. And he seemed like a fit for Oklahoma State. So as far as what you were saying about the offense at Oklahoma State and how it's evolved, I think it's fair to say that it has been similar throughout the years at Oklahoma State, with minor tweaks here and there based on personnel, right? Brandon Whedon, Spencer Sanders aren't going to run the same offense, but you see some similarities there. So, I think consistency on that side of the ball has kind of been a trademark under Gundy.
Yeah, no, I certainly agree with that. And it's interesting, though, with the topic of redshirting comes up in this article. He has 2 years of eligibility, and something Mike Gundy has talked with the family about already. Basically, the rules are you can play in four regular season games and any postseason games while retaining your redshirt status. And I love the optimism here from his dad. He says Gavin could play six or seven games, which would be great. And you could learn the offense and learn from Brennan. So he's saying four regular season games, a Big 12 championship, which would be five, and then six or seven in the playoff. I love the optimism from Jason Freeman. So it sounds like Colby, since he is going to be learning a new offense, we've seen that takes time with guys like Leon Johnson, that took him time to get acclimated. Seems like they're open to the idea to playing some this regular season and preserving a redshirt, which I think would be, he would step into a absolute primary role next year after that. But long way to go. But I thought that was an interesting thing that they brought up.
Yeah, I think so too. And I almost wonder if you could stumble into a best case scenario situation where nobody gets hurt those first couple of months, and then you go into November and Gavin Freeman hasn't had to see the field yet. There have been no injuries. There have been no real reason that you had to have him out there. And then in November, I mean, your first few games in that month, you've got Arizona State on November 2nd in Stillwater. I mean, that's a good first game to throw him in. I don't think there's any scenario in which Oklahoma State loses that game. You got TCU the next week in Fort Worth. I think they'll be better than they were a year ago, not as good as they were 2 years ago. And then Texas Tech the following week in Boone Pickens Stadium. I think best case scenario is he doesn't play the first 8 weeks, and then you've just got Gavin Freeman the rest of the season for free, basically, with a red shirt, and you can ease him into the offense those first couple games against Arizona State and TCU, and then he's kind of just part of your rotation whenever you need him. So I think that's probably best case scenario in my mind.
No, that seems good to me. I mean, I just think adding a talent like him this late is pretty rare. I know it's not a huge portal season, but I think to get him will be big, not only this year, but I think the next year for sure. Do you want to talk about basketball? There's so many moving parts there. Jeremiah Johnson requested his release from Oklahoma State after OSU's brought in like four guards. Kind of a weird, tenuous situation there. I don't think it's a great look from Johnson to request a release after signing. Certainly, Steve Lutz bringing in players from the portal may have given him cold feet. But a lot of moving and shaking in basketball. I don't have many thoughts on that news, really, unless you do.
Yeah, not a ton. I mean, requesting his release means that he's likely going somewhere else, but not necessarily. He could still wind up at Oklahoma State. I understand how some other guys being brought in could make him want to go somewhere else. He's a great player, right? And basketball, these guys want to get as much exposure as young as possible and kind of be the guy. And I get it. It is tough whenever that was a cornerstone of your class, but the player has to do what's best for him and the coach has to do what's best for the program. And if those things don't align, I totally understand. So if he's not all in on being in Stillwater, then he doesn't need to be there. He needs to be somewhere else. But yeah, that's a tough one for Oklahoma State and for Steve Lutz. And then a couple of offers have gone out here for the 2025 class to some long 6'9" guys with some length and can shoot a little bit. So yeah, I like the offers that have been extended, but the Jeremiah Johnson news earlier in the week, that one definitely hurt to wake up and see.
Yeah, those offers you mentioned, I think we were wondering what kind of recruiter Lutz will be, certainly out of the prep ranks, the high school ranks, not the portal ranks. I mean, these guys ranked as highly as number 34 in the country. That's John Clark and Jaden Toombs, as highly as 43 in the country, the entire country. Both are Texas kids. So I think that's something worth noting, Colby, is not only are these both top 50 guys in the country, they're both from the state of Texas. I think we can see Lutz really honing in his focus on the state of Texas, which year in, year out now, Colby, it's become a very prominent state for basketball. So I think that kind of shows us a sign of what's to come from Lutz recruiting-wise.
Yeah, I think so too. And both of those guys have other big offers. They both got offers from Texas. It looks like Clark has an offer from Kansas, Oklahoma offered Toombs. So they've got other big offers as well. And who knows? Those guys don't have to make their decisions yet. Maybe some of it will depend on what happens in year one under Lutz, what it actually looks like on the court where these guys decide to wind up. But I like the idea that he's going out and being aggressive and offering big fish, right? If you don't fish in those ponds, you're not going to catch any of them. So, yeah, I think that that's a great move. And hopefully one of those guys will wind up in Stillwater and stay through that national letter of intent so we can see him on the floor.
Yeah, we shall see. You getting ready for softball? I mean, OSU hosting the Stillwater Regional. They're the number 5 national seed. It's the fifth consecutive NCAA super regional appearance from Cowgirls. Hosting Arizona, who, you know, they're still a national name, national power. They're ranked in the, I think they're ranked 17th in the country, the highest listing for them. So should be a fun weekend in Stillwater. Let's see if the Cowgirls can make their way back to Oklahoma City.
Yeah, you've got to take care of business against this Arizona team. 37-16 this year. They were 24-6 at home, though. They got a lot of their work done at home, and some of that was in the non-con against the Long Beach States of the world, Omaha, North Texas, Northern Colorado. They got a bunch of wins against programs like that. This team was 9-9 on the road, and they were only 13-11 in conference play. So this is a team that, quite frankly, Oklahoma State on paper is just much better than. You've got them at home. It's going to be a great crowd. The weather's going to be fantastic. I expect Oklahoma State to win this series and advance to Oklahoma City. But yeah, I'll have that game on tonight. Let's see, what do we have tonight? We've got hockey in the East, we've got basketball in the West, and we've got softball, and we've got baseball. I've only got three TVs. I might have to wheel the fourth one in there, Carson.
Even though it's not Masters week, you gotta get the fourth TV involved.
From time to time, it's called upon in non-Masters weeks. It's rare, but from time to time, it's called upon.
Let's see here. Cowgirls are 10-3 all time in the super regional round and have won their last five super regional games. So they've had good success in this stage. Certainly Kenny Gajewski knows what he's doing. So I'm with you. I think they should handle business. I will say that hiccup against BYU in the Big 12 tournament, a lot of errors in the field. I think that's the one area that might get them beat, but I fully expect them to win this game. So they should take care of business. And worth noting, which we can save for a toast, Lexi Kilfoyle has a pretty big honor for her, which we'll get to when we get to our toast. But I did want to hit on, before we get to our toast of the week, men's golf, Colby, going on right now. Let's see here. I've got like 100 tabs open. Here we go. They're playing in the Omni La Costa North Course in Carlsbad, California. It's the NCAA Men's Championship. Oklahoma State is 7 over through 10 to 14 holes, depending on which group you're referring to. They're 7 over. And
I mean,
the leader's at even. So, yeah, it's playing pretty tough.
Yeah, there's not a single team on the course that's under par. And at 7 over, Oklahoma State's only two shots back of being T4. Now, half the teams have yet to tee off. Half the teams are going to go in the afternoon, half in the morning. But this is a marathon, not a sprint. So if you do want to keep track of this, just go to GolfStat. That's one word, golfstat.com. And you can just click on the leaderboard there in the top left. You'll see the teams lined up. It's very easy to navigate. They've got team player leaderboards. They've got player leaderboards and then just team leaderboards. So you can track this. The way it works is they'll go Friday, Saturday, Sunday, 18 holes a day for each team, five players. You take four scores and that's your team score for the day. After those 54 holes, it'll be cut to the top 15 teams out of looks like 30, and those 15 will then play 18 more holes of stroke play on Monday. The top eight teams go to match play, which gets decided Tuesday and Wednesday. It is truly a marathon of golf. I've been at one of these before, a couple of them, whenever they were hosted at Carson Creek back in 2018, and the Oklahoma State men won the national championships. I was there every day of the women's and every day of the men's. I was volunteering for Golf Channel. I got a bunch of free rounds of Carson out of it, and it is so much golf if you make it all the way. So just got to pace themselves, and hopefully this team can get into match play, because I think that would go a long way for an Oklahoma State men's golf program that needs some momentum that they really haven't had since that last year when Brian Stark and Eugenio Chikara were here. Chikara slammed his putter down on the ninth green at Greyhawk after making that big putt in a match that they ultimately went on to lose. But that was kind of the last time that I felt like this program really had some juice and really had some legs. So it would be nice to see them make match play this year.
Yeah, that's kind of why I wanted to bring up golf, men's golf. So they win the national championship we all aware of with Wolf Hovland, just one of the greatest teams literally ever assembled. They lost to Texas in the final match play, or was that the semis when they lost to Texas?
Yeah, it was the following year. Oklahoma State won stroke play at the Blessings in Arkansas, I believe by 36 shots, and then lost in the semis of match play to Texas, that team with Cole Hammer and the Cooties.
Yeah, and then was that when Gupta hit that bunker shot into the face?
Oh, good question.
Or I'm thinking of Bushu missing a putt. I think they lost again to Texas. I don't have all the results pulled up.
Okay, so they lost to Texas at the Blessings in 19. They also lost to Texas. That match I referenced where Chikara slammed his putter down, I'm almost certain that they were playing Texas that day too and got beat.
Yeah, they've lost Texas twice in recent memory.
Yeah, Texas. But
I think it's fair for me to wonder and others to wonder where the OSU men's golf is going from here. Mainly because we've just seen Chad Weiberg totally revamp the basketball program when no one, I mean, we all looked at Mike Boynton's contract and said, there's no way they can afford to get rid of Mike Boynton. They did. They were able to lure, with the help of Chad Richardson, mind you, from Paycom, they were able to lure David Taylor out of state college to come coach at Oklahoma State and made a ton of financial promises to assistant coaches, NIL, things of that nature. I think we've seen that Chad Weiberg is willing to make a big move if he doesn't like where a program is at. Because he, again, the safe hire would have been Coleman Scott, but he had to go secure a ton of resources to land a David Taylor. I think at this point, it's fair to question. And again, I'm not calling for Allen Bratton's job. The guy won a national championship. He has had some roster turnover that he couldn't ever envision happening, which we'll get to. But Chad Weiberg didn't hire Allen Bratton. Mike Holder did. He's a holdover. No pun intended. No Colby dad joke intended there. I think it's fair to wonder, in OSU golf is on the same national landscape as OSU wrestling in terms of national champions. It's the one of, if not the preeminent program in that sport. So I'm sitting here wondering, like, it's not out of the question for Chad Weiberg to make a move on men's golf head coach. If I was Allen Bratton, I would worried's the wrong word, but I don't think it's out of the question. I think it's fair to wonder if Chad Weiberg would make a move there.
I think it's a fair question. I don't think it will happen, certainly this offseason. I look at Allen Bratton. He won a national title 6 years ago, and they were still one of the best, most consistent programs on the national scene up until 3 years ago. And then there was the disaster summer with Eugenio Chikara and Brian Stark deciding to take their talents elsewhere. That was a team that was supposed to be coming back and be a legitimate contender for a national championship. You had a young Tiger Christensen on that team as well, who has since transferred to, I believe, Arizona State, who failed to make it out of Oklahoma State's regional, out in wherever it was, California, I believe. So, yeah, I mean, you lose a young Tiger Christensen who came up to be a great player. You lose Brian Stark, who was kind of in the prime of his college career, and you lose Eugenio Chikara, who was one of the best players in college golf. And that all happens really quickly. And I think college golf, look, it's an undercovered sport, right? We know everything that's happening with football. We know everything that's happening with basketball. There's tons of people covering it. We've got all the information. And I think it's a lot easier with those sports to craft opinions around the job a coach is doing. I think it's a little tougher on the golf course when we don't know a lot of the things that are happening day in, day out. And I think from a macro perspective, there are just a lot of programs facility-wise and investment-wise that have caught and even passed Oklahoma State. And Oklahoma State used to be absolute forefront of all that stuff. And now a lot of money has been put into a renovation of Carson Creek. We'll see what that looks like whenever it gets done. I'm really excited to get up there here in a little bit more than a year whenever it reopens. So I do understand the frustration, and I get messages about it from time to time. People know I'm the golf guy, and I get just last week I got one. What's up with the Oklahoma State golf team? Are there any expectations here? What's happening? I get it. I would just say pump the brakes a little bit. I still think Bratton deserves another couple of years to show that the bottom has not fallen out of this thing, and it was a minor temporary dip with a course redesign and one really bad summer where you lost your most talented players for reasons that were totally out of your control.
Do you know the last year they won the Big 12, much less the national title?
I would say they won the Big 12's last in 2019.
2021 and 2019.
Okay.
Those are the last two.
I would have thought Texas won it in 21, but yeah, that 19 team still had some of the studs for Oklahoma State on it.
Now, to your point, they had won a Big 12 title in 2011, didn't win one until 2019. So that's a significant gap there that, you know, within that same midst, they won a national championship. So just because you're not winning your conference doesn't necessarily mean that the program's in tatters. But I don't know. Chad Weiberg's shown he means business, and you're spending that level of money at Carson Creek. You want a golf team that's winning national championships. That's all I'm saying. So,
yeah. I don't think that Bratton just has another decade to do what the last 2-3 years have been, but I think that he has earned the right to prove to us that this is a temporary dip, not the wheels falling off. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and it's a much quicker turnaround, right? You only start five guys. You go get three studs, you're cooking with gas. So he could turn it around quickly. So yeah, for me, it's more of an administration type of concern or question than anything, but that's worth monitoring. We'll see how they do out there in California. All right, you ready for the toast of the week?
Yes, sir.
Let's get to the Yuengling Toast of the Week, brought to you by America's oldest brewery. Be sure to check out Yuengling Brewing Company. We appreciate them sponsoring our Toast of the Week. Certainly going to be a lot of cold beverages downed on Memorial Day weekend. Make sure everyone does it responsibly. Designate a driver, designate a boat captain, what have you. But again, thanks to Yuengling for sponsoring our Toast of the Week. Which direction are you going, Colby?
I've got two here on deck. Are you wanting Kilfoyle or do you have another one?
I've got another one.
You've got another one? Okay, then I'm going to give mine to Lexi Kilfoyle, because this is just, you talk about an absolute perfect time for just a star to emerge for Oklahoma State softball. Kelly Maxwell leaves, goes down the road to Norman, and Kilfoyle comes in, and all she does this year is post a 1.08 ERA, 24-3 this season. She's pitched 162 innings. She's given up just 25 earned runs in 162 innings. She struck out 140 batters, nearly one an inning. She's only walked 29 in those 162 innings. She leads the Big 12. There are four Big 12 teams in super regionals. She leads the conference in ERA, wins, and shutouts, and she's second in the conference in strikeouts. She dominated the Stillwater Regional. She threw 19 of the possible 21 innings. They beat Oklahoma twice down in Norman. She was unanimously selected as the Big 12's pitcher of the year. It's just pretty awesome to see what she had done on the mound for Oklahoma State, a team that absolutely losing Kelly Maxwell needed a Lexi Kilfoyle to emerge, and she deserves all the flowers because she has really put this team on her back the way she's performed on the mound this year. So hopefully she can keep it going, roll through Arizona, hopefully sweep them tonight and tomorrow. I believe it's 7 p.m. tonight and 6 p.m. tomorrow in Stillwater if you're able to get up there and watch this fun team. And if you're not, hopefully you will have the opportunity to watch them here in Oklahoma City in the next week to 10 days, because that tournament could be a whole lot of fun with an Oklahoma team who has just come back to the pack just a little bit. So Yuengling Toast of the Week goes to Lexi Kilfoyle.
Yeah, one of three nominees for National Player of the Year in college softball. Again, just a tremendous season, tremendous honor for her. Ranks fourth nationally in ERA. I mean, I was trying, as you were talking, like there's a comparison that's like in my brain somewhere and I can't locate it. Like a situation where Oklahoma State lost someone and replaced them with someone better. I can't remember what I'm thinking of. It might be football or basketball related, but anyway, she filled Lexi Maxwell's spot and then some, had a better season and named National Player of the Year. That's pretty poetic for Kenny Gajewski, you got to admit. So
National Player of the Year candidate, the top three, that will be announced though prior to the World Series. So we'll know before Oklahoma City whether she won that award. It's been given out since 2002. No cowgirl has ever won the award. So Kilfoyle could be number one. We'll see.
Yeah. She's going up against the Texas catcher, Reese Atwood, and Stanford pitcher, Nigeri Kanade. I got to think Texas might get it because they've been so dominant, but we'll see.
Bums. Give it to Kilfoyle. Bums.
That'd be sweet. My toast of the week's going to Victor Hovland, who looked just completely lost, looked like he had lost his game. He said he contemplated not even playing in the PGA Championship. His swing was so gone. Well, he gets back with Joe Mayo, his short game guru, and boom, it's like he never left. He's back to the Victor Hovland, who was playing like the best player in the world last year as the season came to an end. And he was within a shot. He kind of missed a gimme there to finish third instead of T2, but he made another great run at a major championship. And again, it's been since Bob Tway, the only Cowboy to win a major. So it was great to see Victor back to his usual self, playing the way we know he can.
PSA to Victor Hovland. Vic, I know you're listening right now. I'm sure you're a loyal listener, doesn't miss an episode. If the last 4 months are the result of what happens when you don't have Joe Mayo around, and then just last week is the result of what happens when you do have Joe Mayo around, I don't know. Maybe we just keep Joe Mayo around. Carson, have you ever listened to Joe Mayo? Have you ever heard him on a podcast?
I haven't. I've been meaning to. I haven't.
So I can send you the link to a pretty good Joe Mayo podcast where he talks about just kind of some of his philosophy on getting steep with wedges and around the greens and stuff. And the dude is just an absolute golf maniac, I think is the best way to describe him. He's like so in the weeds with the numbers and P2 and P1 and all these different positions and, you know, percentage of weight, steepness, angle of descent, pulling up the handle, like all these different things that are so far into the weeds. It just seems like it's perfect for what Victor Hovland had been described as, which is this guy who always wants to learn and is a golf maniac about all these things too, and wants to understand the physics of everything that's happening in the golf swing, in the pitching motion. It's just that they seem like a perfect fit, just both golf lunatics who love the numbers and love all of it. And I just hope that they stay together, because it was just a perfect fit last year. It seemed like Vic was on his way to being one of the best players in the world consistently, fell off the cliff. And now it seems like maybe he found something a week ago. So hopefully he can stay in that mold, because this is a guy, Carson, I mean, he's got the talent to win multiple majors. A lot of guys do, very few ever accomplish it, but he's still relatively young in his career, in his 20s. So I really hope that we can get some major championships out of Victor Hovland's career, because he is for sure that caliber of player.
And they're hard to win, that's for sure, with Scottie Scheffler around. But there was a really good column from Kevin Van Valkenburg, who works for No Laying Up. He kind of followed Victor around for months and didn't know where the story would take him until, you know, Victor kind of lost his game there. I haven't read it yet, but I heard there was a quote from Rory McIlroy stating that, you know, Victor has this reputation as this jovial, laughable, you know, very, very fun-loving, easygoing type of guy. He goes, and he is, but he's got a very, very intense mean streak side to him that he goes, not many people can be both, but Victor's one of those rare people that can be both. And I think you see that come out of him when he's playing golf. So I need to read that column to learn a little bit more about Vic, because he's such a private person, keeps to himself. He didn't agree to do an interview, I don't think, with Kevin, but Kevin did stop him and say, hey, I'm still going to write this, just so you know. And he appreciated that. So I need to go read that column. But to your point, Colby, Vic is very much like Tiger in that he's a serial tinkerer. You know, Tiger famously changed his golf swing after the greatest season we've ever seen in 2000. Like he's got a lot of Tiger in him that I think he tinkers maybe too much, but you know, it's good to have things in common with Tiger, I guess, regardless.
Yeah, it's good to have things in common there. And I think hopefully this can all be a lesson for him. Like tinkering is one thing when tinkering is necessary, but there's a time to tinker and there's a time to leave things alone. And when you're blitzing the best players in the world, that's the time to leave things alone and just continue to build on the skills that you've already been working on, not to change things. And then when the bottom falls out, that's when you need to change things. So I do think that there are lessons to be learned here for Victor Hovland. He knows a lot more about golf than I do. He's a very smart guy. Victor Hovland will figure it out, and he'll stay on that stage, I would assume, for another 10, 15 years in his career. I think his swing is repeatable for a long time. It's not one of these crazy violent swings that I think is going to cause him back problems and things like that. So hopefully we've got another seriously like 10 to 15 years of prime Victor Hovland.
Yeah, I hope so. All right, Colby, anything else you want to get to?
I don't believe so. Everybody.
Oh, I have one.
Yeah.
So I went to the Zach Bryan concert this past Saturday, a week ago, and I'm not the biggest country guy, but I've really gotten into Zach Bryan over the last year or so. We bought tickets forever ago, where the concert kind of snuck up on me. He's playing a great set, playing a great show. He's doing his last song, Revival. And then I see Pistol Pete gets on stage. So I was like, I got to put this on Twitter. So I took a picture, took a little video. Zach Bryan retweeted both like right after the show. I couldn't believe it. It was amazing. But apparently his dad's a huge OSU fan. So it's always a risky move, Colby. You're going to kind of PO about half the crowd with Sooner fans. But Zach Bryan didn't care. He's from Ooliga. So shout out to Zach Bryan, who, you know, great, great musician, great Oklahoman. And he's also an OSU Cowboy. You got to love that.
That's fantastic. Yeah, a buddy of mine went to that concert. He was lamenting his decision because he's a diehard Thunder fan. He bought the Zach Bryan tickets 8 months ago. Of course, you don't know at that point that it's going to fall on the same night as the last game of the Oklahoma City Thunder season. So
yeah,
he did go to the concert and he shared your sentiment, said it was a blast. And then you didn't have to watch the heartbreaking end to the Thunder season. You were
I watched it because okay. Zach hadn't started yet. It timed out perfectly. He might have been watching it for all I know, but it was funny. Me and the guy next to me had our phones up watching it. The row in front of us, these like six dudes were leaning over the row in front of them to watch it on this other person's phone. And that kind of hit me too. I tweeted about this, like Thunder basketball's back. I mean, every row I could see visually, at least one person in the row had the Thunder game pulled up. And at one point when J-Dub hit his last three, you could hear like my entire side of the stadium started barking. So even though they lost Colby, like Thunder basketball, the excitement for it is all the way back. Cause no, we didn't miss the end cause you didn't want to, cause Thunder basketball is totally completely back in action.
Yeah. 100%. There've been moments like that, where you're the guy who has the sporting event on your phone. And those are some of the times I've been the most popular in my entire life. I showed up late to a wedding reception once. I missed the wedding because of work. I showed up late, but I had a game on my phone. So I'm sitting there and everybody's huddled around our table watching this game. Those are so much fun. I remember at my wife's high school reunion, I had the Oklahoma State football game on. So everybody huddled around and we watched that for like 30 minutes before we really got into the evening and the reunion and everything. I do have one more question for you, sports related, and then I promise everyone we will get out of here. Tomorrow morning, FA Cup final, your Man U taking on Man City. It's a big one. Any chance?
Nah, it's going to be a bloodbath.
I kind of feel that way.
We're too injured, man. All our players are hurt.
I was really bummed that the Premier League season had to come to an end because Crystal Palace started playing their best football of the year like 3 weeks before the season started in, and they were just blitzing everybody. And it's like, okay, season's over. Congrats.
Yeah, they needed like one more month of the season. They'd probably make Champions League next year.
Yeah, maybe. They were seriously on fire at the end of the year.
They embarrassed United. I mean, men and children.
I think if I remember right, they went and got after Tottenham after that too. So
yeah, that's right. Well, now we'll have to buy half your team and call it good.
Yep, sounds like a plan. All right, Carson, great stuff. Everybody have a great Memorial Day weekend. Be careful. Drink your Yinglings responsibly. There will be a lot of people out on the road. So everyone have a great weekend, a safe weekend, and we will be back next week. Good luck to baseball and softball over the weekend. Thanks, everyone, for listening. As always, go Pokes!